good evening all. I was just speaking there to Harry before this service, and one thing we've both noticed
is that just how much there is in the book of Proverbs on a lot of different subjects, including friendship, as we looked at last week. But I've been finding this one maybe the most challenging. And from a speaker's perspective, to try to not try to touch on everything that is in there, but to boil it down to, I guess, some principles that we can take away with us. And hopefully, what I'm certainly hoping is that this is going to whet our appetite for us personally to go back to the book of Proverbs and to keep going back to this wonderful book that isn't always easy to read because it doesn't read like a story. But if we keep at it, there's so much there for us to learn. But I think why maybe family is an even more challenging one is because there's so much going on in a family. There's so many different relationships. There's the husband-wife relationship. There's the parents and children relationships, even the sibling relationship. The last one we're not even going to touch on tonight. But the other ones we are going to have a look at to see what Proverbs teaches us on that relationship between husband and wife, as well as parents to children and children to parents. Well, one thing I have been more and more convinced about is that this is a subject that I think we should revisit. We should look at it in more detail, at other passages in the Bible as well, because I do think that the family as we know it, and certainly for those who have been around for a little bit longer than me, the family as we've known it seems to be in big trouble. Interestingly, I came across this newspaper article not too long ago where it said, as the headline, "Should you stay in a good enough marriage?" It says that women in their 50s are making the running in a growing number of divorce cases. This is about a lady called Lindsay who looks forward to 2016 to be a landmark year, because in January she will be rebooting her life by renting out her home, starting a new job in Thailand, and hopefully alighting on a new romance. Lindsay is no 20-something who has never known the responsibility of marriage, it says, children or career. She's actually a 55-year-old teacher with a grown-up daughter, currently issuing divorce proceedings against a husband after 28 years to start this new phase in her life, one she believes will be her best yet. To the outside eye, there was nothing wrong with her marriage, but for many years it has felt like it has been a contract mainly for my husband's convenience. Interesting. Should you stay in a marriage that is good enough? In Holland, they had a program which had very high ratings called the Family Dinner. And what happened was that a family was visited which had experienced a feud. And this presenter would try to reconcile or try to get the two to come together. He would meet both sides, and kind of the ultimate thing at the end would have been this limousine where one half of the family who had kind of started the whole process of reconciliation was hoping that the other part of the family would be in that limousine coming out to join them for dinner so that they could talk. Very interesting, quite often they didn't even know what the whole problem was about. It probably started with something very small. Some hadn't been speaking to each other for 10, 20, sometimes 30 years. And guess what? Plenty of times, the door of the limousine would open and no one would come out. It's heartbreaking that a program like that is even necessary and even on our television. I'm finding that we're getting more and more complex situations with stepfathers, stepmothers, half-brothers, half-sisters, splitting ourselves maybe two, three ways at Christmas and trying to figure out just who and how things are connected. And I know within our church, we're not strangers to that. And for some of us who experience that, it has its challenges in itself. And you're trying to make the most of it. But certainly, we can't assume anymore that there is a father and mother and children who live together and have done so for a long time. On top of that, when you think about maybe a different season when it comes to families, is that there is a growing retired population that are seen by society as an ever-growing burden on the taxpayer, leaving many parents to live in lonely isolation. It's astonishing. And maybe you know of families where people aren't on speaking terms anymore. And it's maybe not got anything to do with any issues or problems, but simply not making the effort or simply growing apart. Certainly studying these passages has made me incredibly grateful for the situation that I've grown up in. In many ways, very stable. A father and mother who've loved us, who've tried to teach us about Jesus, tried to teach us about the different things in life. But I've been challenged as well at the same time that now that I'm in a different season in life, I've got my own family, own children, that I must do everything to honor my parents as well, as that is something that we'll look at tonight. So I think it's very good to look at it tonight. I think it's very necessary and very important. And I do hope that, as I said, it might whet our appetite for a lot more. And that Proverbs may help, because one thing I've noticed is just how much wisdom I personally need in this, partly because of just my age, and so many of you will know so much more and have so much more experience. But that's why we have God's Word. So let's look at what Proverbs is teaching us about these different relationships, husband-wife, parents to children, and children relating to parents. First of all, the relationship between husband and wife within a family. Look with me to chapter 2, verse 17, and chapter 5, verse 18. And just for convenience, I've put them on the screen as well, because otherwise you'll be flipping back and forth. But the two verses there says, who has left the partner of her youth and ignored the covenant she made before God. This is the unfaithful person. Compared to chapter 5, verse 18, may your fountain be blessed, and may you rejoice in the wife of your youth. I mean, what stands out in those verses? What's the key issue here in this parallel? Anyone? Youth? Covenant? The covenant you made in your youth. There's a reflection here, almost an assumption, that a relationship that started maybe in your youth is still ongoing. There is the unfaithful person compared to the faithful person. And the word, as you said, that is used there is the word covenant. Now, I have found the book by Timothy Keller, The Meaning of Marriage, very helpful. I don't know if anyone else has seen this, but I can highly recommend it, because he has a chapter on this whole idea of covenant. It's kind of in response to a lot of people coming to him saying, why should I need a piece of paper to tell someone or to declare to someone my love for them? I mean, a lot of people would actually say, why even get married for that reason? But he says, for example, about the essence of marriage, that the whole notion of the covenant is actually to tackle the sentimental view of love and be able to choose to love even when feelings are absent or low. And the idea of covenant is very much that you promise the other person, it's like an oath, to remain faithful. And it's not just faithful, but helped by committing to one another and submitting to one another in something as formal as this agreement, this covenant, a binding promise. Not just something that you say on your wedding day, but something that you can keep coming back to. I would probably go as far as saying, actually, us humans are just not as strong as we sometimes think, and we simply just need something as formal as that. So that in the times when we're maybe not feeling like it, and that can be at any stage, we hold on and we remain faithful to the promise that we once made. Timothy Keller says it this way, and I thought this might be helpful. He says that a wedding is not a declaration of present love, but a promise of future love. Isn't that interesting? A declaration not of present love, but of future love. Or, he says, the vows that are said at a wedding have nothing to do about how you feel at that time, at that moment, but again are a promise about how you will continue to work hard at loving one another in the future. We need something as formal as this covenant, and actually it is something beautiful and something that is a theme throughout the Bible. The whole idea of faithfulness, we looked at this morning, but the whole idea of covenant and faithfulness is actually the way we in a marriage can reflect our living God, who also covenanted himself to us, being faithful even when we're not faithful. So hence, even for that, for us as Christians, it ought to be a desire to, in the most important relationship, humanly speaking, we want to reflect this God and his covenant and his faithfulness. Yet, if we think it's some kind of cold agreement between a husband and wife, let's look to chapter 5 in Proverbs. And again, I found Tim Keller on this subject very helpful, things that I hadn't maybe noticed before. But he talks there about, or he quotes there the verses where it says, "May your fountain be blessed and may you rejoice in the wife of your youth." And a little bit later on it says, "May you ever be intoxicated with her love. Because why, my son, be intoxicated with another man's wife? Why embrace the bosom of a wayward woman?" The word there, captivated, is, or the word intoxicated in some translations. In other translations, we'll have the word captivated. I kind of wondered if the idea of being satisfied in your wife can be something about, you know, what she can do for you. But actually, when you start to realize about being intoxicated, being captivated, it's actually all about the other person, about her in this case. It's about being hungry for the person. It's eager to know the person. It's being fixated, wanting only more and more and more of the individual. It's not about receiving in that sense, but it's about giving and wanting to learn more. Well, Tim Keller actually makes then the link with chapter 2, verse 17 that we've just read earlier on, where it speaks there about the partner of your youth or your companion of your youth. And he's actually pointing out the fact that these two words are very interesting when you start to combine them. He says, for example, so on the one hand, we read about a relationship, a romantic relationship, where you're truly intoxicated. And I think you should only grow to become even more captivated by the person that you married so many years ago. But he says, if you combine it with the idea of companionship or partnership, which is a word that is also used for kind of your best friend, your most intimate friend, that is, if you combine the two, you have the most unique relationship possible. I think we live in a society that we think we can't combine the two, being the best friend as well as true lovers of one another. But in marriage, and according to the Bible, it is, and it should be our aim. And the way it's maybe well explained in a picture is that lovers are described by C.S. Lewis, for example, two people who face one another, but friends are two people beside each other, both facing ahead. In the sense of a marriage should be two people who are captivated by one another, and yet at the same time they're aware that they are on a journey. They are moving forward. They're not yet where they should be, but they're, through their marriage, are helping one another to get where they one day should be. It's that idea of sanctification. I think, and if you have a Bible, turn with me to chapter 5. I think it is what Paul is hinting at in Ephesians chapter 5, where it's also spoken about the love between a husband and a wife. And it's always so challenging to read, particularly the bit about the husbands. They get much more instruction than the wives, probably because it's necessary, isn't that right? It says, "The husbands, love your wives," in verse 25 of Ephesians 5, "just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her to make her holy, cleansing her by the washing with water through the word, and to present her to himself as a radiant church without stain or wrinkle or any other blemish, but holy and blameless." And then it says this, "In the same way, husbands ought to love their wives as their own bodies." Tim Keller calls it to have a ministry, have a mindset of ministry within marriage. Paul looks to us husbands, and I think also to wives, for us to help one another to grow to become more like Jesus. Within that commitment of a covenant, passionate relationship. Challenging, isn't it? In today's world, in today's society. Maybe again, you've experienced it yourself. Maybe even own family members who have struggled and who have said, actually, we're not in love with each other anymore. We've fallen out of love and we're going our separate ways. Do you know who's been my greatest example? It's my grandparents on my mom's side. Is that maternal grandparents? Do you know they're from a generation? They ended up being married 63 years. I think when they started off, they were much more practical about it. There wasn't that notion of dating and courting or whatever you call it. They weren't necessarily in love. And yet they loved one another when they started off. But they loved each other more when one of them passed away at 63 years of marriage. And you could tell. They grew to being able to answer or finish each other's sentences. They knew what the other person was thinking. There was something absolutely gorgeous and beautiful about how they had grown to love one another. I think sometimes now we have this expectation that where they finished, we want to start. And when we feel it's slipping away from us, we wonder if we're still and should still be in this marriage. Whereas that was never something in their mindset. So that's the first thing that Proverbs teaches us. It's about faithfulness, covenantal faithfulness, but also that mindset of wanting the best for our partner. And if we learn, I guess, to live in that way, it will have all its proper effects within the family. And I guess if you're single here tonight and you wonder, well, what is this to me? I guess, first of all, I think keep this in the back of your mind. If you are looking for a partner, look for someone who has that same desire to have a covenantal, faithful relationship. But even more so, look for a partner that has that desire to bring the best out of you, that has that mindset of ministry in his love and his care, or her love and her care for you. Well, let's move on then to what the Proverbs has to say about parents relating to children. Look with me to chapter 23, verse 24. Again, it will be on the screen. Chapter 23, verse 24 says the following. It says, "The father of a righteous child has great joy, and a man who fathers a wise son rejoices in him." A good question to ask is, what's the main goal in parenting? What would you answer? What's the main goal in parenting? For the child to be happy. For the child to be happy. Any other goals in parenting? That they come to know Jesus. Yeah.
To teach them and train them in righteousness.
Say it again.
To teach them and train them in righteousness.
Very good. To teach and train them in righteousness. And I don't think you're just giving that as an answer, but that's certainly where Proverbs will be leading and guiding us to. I think in general there seems to, well, probably also a big move where I think maybe even a generation ago it was a lot about control. I mean, when you read about the Victorian times, it was, you know, children are to be seen, not heard. Maybe some of you have grown up in that kind of climate, and that's not always easy. And now I think maybe we've gone slightly too far to the other side where we want to just love them. But in loving them, we also do need to instruct and guide. Certainly my two girls aren't naturally, I mean, however much they look more like Donna than me, but they haven't got this natural inclination not to think about themselves first. And that's where we do teach them and instruct them, but especially lead them to the person of Jesus, and ultimately longing and praying that they will have this relationship with Jesus. Proverbs says it like this: make them wise. Our job is to instruct and to help our children to become competent and able to cope in all the areas of life, just as we're studying and learning at the moment through the book of Proverbs ourselves. And very interestingly, the word in chapter 22:15 that is used is, for example, discipline, but this word discipline actually often is referred to as a coach. And a coach is that combination of both instruction as well as discipline. It's not just to control the child, but it's very much to help, but also to instruct, to correct. I mean, it's a beautiful, all-encompassing word. And we're to take all of that as parent in our role. Very interestingly, another newspaper article just shows the need for this as well. It says here about, the headline is, "How to Future-Proof Your Teen." It says, "Meet Generation D." I didn't know we were in Generation D. I'm not sure why, but anyway, it says Generation D is stressed, cyberbullied, screen-addicted, self-harming, and overly dependent on their parents. And this article is all about taking preemptive action. Interestingly, a lot of the points are about dealing with limiting time on the computer. To me, that seems natural, but maybe our girls are of an age where it's still easy, and maybe that is a big challenge. But first of all, it says, talk in a low voice, clearly and slowly, a high pitch and lots of words, and your message will be lost to the teen brain. There you go. Didn't know that. It does encourage to discuss instead of lecture, to encourage independent thinking and learning. Don't be afraid to apologize when necessary. And have a go, it says here, at one of their computer games yourself. See how it draws you in and visualize how you'd feel if you were interrupted by Supper's Ready. Well, I might just leave that article and continue on Proverbs. I think there's more wisdom in that. But it's true, isn't it? I wonder if we lost the way a little bit in the whole parenting thing. When we've shied away so much in using discipline, because that's become a negative word, but we've lost sight of the whole idea of the instruction and the wisdom that God passes on through us to the children. Very interestingly, it was John Piper who had a sermon on chapter 1, verse 7 through 9, which I found helpful. And it's on the internet, so take an opportunity to listen to it. But here's Proverbs chapter 1, verse 7 through 9, where it says, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. Listen, my son, to your father's instruction, and do not forsake your mother's teaching. They are a garland to grace your head and a chain to adorn your neck." Here's the three things that John Piper, a pastor in America, brought out of this. First of all, he said the family is actually God's idea, and it's also God's basic school for instructing children on how to live in the world. It says the father is to be an instructor, but the mother is to be a teacher. We're not just, he says, to fill the earth with beings, but with instructed beings. He even goes as far to say the parents will have to give account. Even with the help of school and church, it's still the responsibility of parents. I wonder if that's what's happened. I think it's been going on for way too long, but we're looking to school. We're even looking quite often to Sunday school and review to teach our children the things that ought to be discussed in our own home. We complain maybe about sexual education in the schools, but it still happens too often that parents give that booklet, just like I was given a booklet called Almost 12. It's been never talked about. Yet those conversations, however embarrassing it might be to us, need to happen in the home. The church is there to help. The school is there to help in some areas, but also sometimes they're not very helpful. But ultimately, it is the family where God looks at as the basic school for instructing children. The foundation, John Piper says, of this instruction should be the fear of the Lord. Of course, with the challenge that it ought to be full of grace and enough grace in the instruction. But interestingly, he points out the fact that under God, both fathers and mothers share in the responsibility of this family instruction. Ouch. I mean, how true. How many fathers should not stand up and take up their responsibility because the mothers are looking for the men to take their role in leading their families spiritually, opening up the Bible together in family worship time, creating that space to sit at the table and to read and to pray. But also as an encouragement, I guess, to mothers, if you ever feel that it's seen by society as something lower than following a career and going for that, let's not see it as something low when it is something that God has given us as a responsibility to be co-instructors together with our husbands. Timothy's mother and grandmother, I guess, are great examples. And in that sense, I would say, even if you're here as an aunt or an uncle, there's a role for you there. Even within our church, we have so many children here, and if you're involved in back, let's do everything that we can to instruct the children entrusted to us. But lastly, this. What about then the children towards the parents? Well, there's maybe not a lot of children here of a younger age, but I think there's challenges still for all of us. Proverbs chapter 23, verse 22 says this. It says, children, listen to your father who gave you life, and do not despise your mother when she is old. What are children supposed to do? Listen. And what are they not supposed to do? Despise. Listen and do not despise. Pay attention. Instead, we know that the Bible teaches that children should honor your father and mother. Boy, that is a command repeated generously through the Bible, also in the New Testament. It's the first one it says with a promise. Children, honor your father and mother. I've struggled with that. And maybe you struggle with it. Maybe you don't have an easy relationship with your mom or with your dad, whatever has happened in the past. And you wonder what that means to you. Maybe you think, well, that's only when you're living, you know, when you're 18. Beyond that, you're away, you can forget about it. But I don't think we can stop honoring our parents. I think it's simply that we ought to respect them and not treat them lightly, not dismissive, but instead try to find ways in which to show them that respectful, that rightful respect through listening to them, taking initiative to keep in touch. Even someone that I was reading about suggested giving them the honorable place at the table. Also, it's good and important to find ways to show our gratitude in what they've taught us and invested in us, even if there's been plenty that we don't agree with. But maybe one of the hardest, but also one of the most beautiful ways in which we can honor our parents is to forgive them. And I do want to say that at any of these series where we're really trying to learn what it means to live for Jesus each and every day, if there's anything that is hard for us, don't rush away. We want to pray with you. We want to surround one another and help one another to put this into practice. But maybe that's a good place to finish. Because some of these things will be hard. Maybe we're in a marriage that is not easy to be in that covenantal love. As I said, maybe we've got parents or we've even been victims of abuse. I guess maybe the final question to ask ourselves, then, how does the gospel change us? How does the gospel make a difference in all of this? Well, someone once said that the default mode of the human heart is, I obey, therefore I'm accepted. And if that's our mode of thinking, I obey, that's why I'm accepted, we'll leave here with a heavy burden on our shoulders. And we're going to be unrealistic in trying to even do part of what we've just looked at tonight. But what does the gospel say? The gospel says, I'm accepted by Christ. That is why I obey. In other words, this grace that I've received through faith in the truth, I now share with those around me. And in those places where it's the hardest, I remember God's grace for me. In the times where you might say, you've sinned against me, you might want to add, but I've sinned against Jesus. And even Jesus can help us in relating to difficult parents, because now we understand that our approval comes not from our earthly fathers, but from the ultimate perfect Father in heaven. I guess without the gospel transforming our lives, it is impossible to apply these things. But let us go from here, growing in that grace, because only that way will we be able to live for Jesus in these areas of life, as a child, as a spouse, maybe as a future spouse. So maybe we'll pray for that, and then I'll hand over to Diane. Lord, in a short period of time, we've tried to look at different aspects of family life. And I'm conscious that for some of us, this might be simply confirmation that we're trying to do the right thing, but that for others this might bring up a lot of difficult and sensitive issues. In that case, may each one of us cry out from our heart and say, Lord, will you help me? Will you help me, even in the most difficult situations, to learn what it means to live for you? And help me then particularly to grow in that grace that I have received undeservedly, so that I can also give it away undeservedly. For your glory. Amen.